Chapter 18. Treatment. I woke up in treatment, realizing that drugs and alcohol were no longer there to redeem me or stop the pain of my guilt and shame, nor were they there to help control my anger and rage or assist in the reduction of my anxiety. I was engaged in my own personal battle, and I was a long ways from the poppy fields of Afghanistan. My unmanageable life was spinning downward, and my thought that I could drink again had brought me to the brink of tragedy. The irony and pain that this happened at the same time that I lost my father and became a father myself had not escaped me. I was faced with the unredeemable reality that I had hurt others and I was not forgiven. Still, I must move on. Claire had not forgotten nor forgiven my relapse. The disappointment I saw in her eyes tugged at my heart. I had relapsed. As a newly recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I had been living with the false assumption that I could now handle using. My assumption was that being cleared of any current drunken offenses, I had self-corrected enough. I had dropped my addictive behavior and self-centered ways. Once again, John Barleycorn had seduced me into just one drink. I nearly paid for that one drink with my life. My therapist told me I may be too smart to live. It is a simple program, son. Simple. Read chapter 5 in the Big Book again. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Claire's expectation was that I get into Alcoholics Anonymous. In her voice, I did not hear acceptance. I heard resolution. In her voice, I did not hear forgiveness. I heard her resolve to close any revolving door of perpetual relapse. I heard disbelief and shock that I was aggressive with her father. I did sense a soft hint of love. If I live the rest of my life unforgiven, expecting to move my life forward, then I have to get past this self-pity. I can no longer live a life of denial, thinking I am not an addict or that my addiction affects no one but me. I have to get past all the resentment that drives me to drink. My family may not choose to forgive or accept me. They may choose instead to remember all my wrongdoings. But I am choosing to stay sober. I want to move forward. I feel confident that I will not be allowed to live further in this fashion, that I will bring myself to an end, which means that I have to try sobriety. If not, my higher power will take me home, I am sure. I cannot allow myself the luxury of thinking I can have one beer. I simply cannot allow that to take place or I will lose. How could I have ever considered that I was not powerless over addiction? How could I have ever considered that I had a choice? From Claire's perspective, I had to commit for the rest of my life not to drink or use drugs. From where I was, staying sober today was a damn good idea because my life had just been devastated again, completely and utterly devastated. Progress, I told myself, not perfection. Claire was right. I am not like other people. I am not like Robert, who can take or leave alcohol. I am more like my dad, who was totally out of control. I am not a normal user. I am a fortunate person whose addiction has not yet killed them. Charlie's mind slipped back to his first week of treatment at the SEK Addiction Treatment Center in Girard. Those days were sunny and almost too warm to be outside, but he enjoyed it there. Charlie sat hidden away from anyone at the facility at a picnic table that was neatly tucked around a corner in the far back. No fellow consumers, no staff. No one could see him at all. He sat with Rosie, and he liked that. They had been there together as he wrote in his journal for hours. He would write and read to Rosie. I am committed to stay here and engage in treatment through both signature and spoken word. I so promise to my family and, most importantly, to myself. The only time I have surrendered was when I was spinning out in my car. I was spinning out of control, and that fluttering was going on around my head. At that point, something took over me spiritually and brought me to safety. That is what I need to focus on now. I need to remind myself of that complete surrender. Kent R. Leon, Ph.D., LCAC, was Charlie's clinical therapist. He was 70 plus, and to say he was eccentric was putting it mildly. Dr. Leon had been brought back from retirement because Charlie had said he wanted to go to the community-based treatment facility where his mother, Liza, worked. The Veteran Affairs Office and local medical director had given approval, with the instruction that no one who knew family or who were family could provide any direct care. Dr. Leon's treatment approach to addiction was based on a book he wrote about 12-step work in AA. His book was based on real-life people's stories, described through a prison of gestalt and existential philosophy. The cornerstone of his warrior approach followed the teachings of a rabbi born over 2,000 years ago, Jesus. Leon was also a follower of Ram Dass, the author of the seminal 1971 best-selling book, Be Here Now. Effective, outrageous, and kind were all words that described Dr. Leon. The man had retired 14 years prior and had actually treated Joe and Skippy. Charlie laughed to himself, as he had Joe's antique journal to match his antique therapist. That old expression that time will heal all wounds seemed so distant. It seemed to be a million years away. Now, here Charlie sat alone with Rosie on a picnic bench trying to complete his writing assignment in the journal. Old Leon had instructed Charlie to write in his journal the answer to this question. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Charlie wrote his answer as, the sound of a drunken man who cannot hit his ass with both hands at the same time. The next journal entry was to answer, how did your life become unmanageable? After that, the instructions were to complete the following four statements. I resent, I demand, I appreciate, I want. The second and third questions came pretty easy and were very lengthy entries in Charlie's journal. The sound of one hand clapping, not so good. Old Leon just laughed and handed Charlie a huge queen conch shell. You need to try again, my son. You're not listening. The other questions I did okay on, but now I had to redo all of them with how I resent, how I demand, and so on, because old Leon said, I answered why, not how. That just screws with your head. No wonder you got drunk if you treat yourself like that, Dr. Leon admonished me. The action, son. How did you choose? Shit or ice cream, they both look the same. Which would you rather eat? How they taste, the results from each, that's what's different. No one cares why, son. How? That is the key. The behavior action equals the results. Dr. Leon was a purist in gestalt therapy techniques and never asked a patient why, only how. His use of the empty chair was well known. The next day's session brought the assignment, what is stopping you from staying sober? To answer, I have to make a list of the worst things that could happen to me if I stay in recovery. I took another crack at the one hand clapping and was told to put the seashell to Rosie's ear as I was again overthinking my answer. Old Leon is super odd. The third day, I was encouraged to write letters to those I need to make amends to. My instruction was to write a letter to Joe so that I can read my honesty. On the fourth day, Dr. Leon told me to say 10 times, pride and memory had a fight and pride always wins. Then read chapter 5, Big Book of AA. Then rewrite the letter to Joe. Again, old Leon asked me, can you give yourself to this simple program? According to Claire, it is time for a big change, and I do agree. There is no redemption for what I have been through and all I have done. There is only hope. My life was on hold, a pause. I was glad to be able to receive visits from people now that I had transitioned to primary care, but not everyone was glad to see me. My Uncle Jess was prickly. My whole family were responding to their own frustrations and fears. They had thought I was lost, that I was a dead man this time. I could hear their belief that the next time I would be. My life was going to be what I made of it, and I was fortunate that I had not killed myself spinning out on that overpass. Just like the night she swam to save me, Rosie never left my side. She was always present with a capital P. I know this sounds weird, but I read my journal out loud to her. I can sense Rosie's distress when the shit I write is too deep. When I read Joe's journal entry, the world is only the visible aspect of God. What being a warrior does is cause a challenge by following the trail in search of a higher purpose for a life. She whined and laid her head on my lap. The night of the accident, Rosie's appearance brought the visible aspect of God to my door. She brought light on my darkest night. I read the reports, actually rewrote them in my journal, but I still do not recall my priestly crossing of the 30 semi-trucks. I remember the fluttering because it was so physical. I remember Rosie swimming to me in the car as it went under because it was also so physical. Yes, I thought she was Zoe. The rest is still a blackout that I cannot recall. As these thoughts poured through my mind, Rosie snuggled up even closer to me. She was my little piece of the visible aspect of God. Dr. Leon looked across the room at the young man, Charlie. The bruising on his face was fading. He was shaven with a fresh military haircut. Rather nice-looking lad.
It has been 5 weeks since your wreck, Charlie. You have been with me in treatment 14 days now, son.
Right, Charlie said, if you say so.
I think it is time to talk about your recurring dream. I understand you're waking at night and sitting with the dog.
Breathing in deeply, Charlie said. We don't have to talk about it now. His heart began to race and his palms began to sweat. Charlie muttered, Not if you don't want to. I mean, it is just a dream. Silence came over the room. Only the sound of Rosie snoring at his feet could be heard.
Charlie, you know you're different. You know that the Addiction Treatment Center took you in for recovery and that I agreed to be your therapist, Dr. Leon said.
Charlie said nothing. Dr. Leon continued with a voice of kind wisdom.
You had worthy military service in which you experienced trauma. This continues in your dreams to be unfinished. I say this out of my knowledge and experience treating recurring dreams. You were a medic, a healer. You came upon a soldier who, by no fault of your own, could not be healed. He was dead. Beneath him lay a living child, am I correct?
Charlie nodded his head.
Out there, I believe, is still the family of the soldier, Michael B. Lee, and the little Afghan girl.
Dr. Leon paused. Charlie shrugged.
So, I mean, this is war. I have many veteran and soldier friends. Some are dead, some are alive, life goes on, whatever.
Dr. Leon said,
In your wreck, son, you could have been killed. That you were not killed was due to chance and the intervention of a dog.
Charlie listened.
You are alive, son. The life comes infinite potential.
Charlie bursted out. Why do you keep calling me son? I am not your son.
I'm old. You are young. I call you son. I am a warrior. I interact with purpose. You would do yourself a big favor by asking how and not why.
How do you call me son? Replied Charlie snidely.
Leon smiled.
Obviously, with my voice to your ear. Your assignment is to write 2 letters, one to the little girl, the other to the family of Michael B. Lee.
Charlie exhaled, and his tears welled in his eyes and said softly,
I have no address.
Dr. Leon explained.
And you have no letters. Please, first things first.
Charlie shouted, "Damn you!" slammed the door as he walked out. The next day, Charlie arrived early for a session. He had two letters in hand and an answer for what is the sound of one hand clapping.
The sound of the sea.
Dr. Leon shook his head from side to side.
No, I will look at the letters now.
Michael B. Lee, are you certain his family still is out there? Asked Charlie.
Dr. Leon said, yes, of course. There is absolutely some living relative.
And Charlie said, I want to find him. I figure there is a paper trail for Michael, possibly not for the girl. I am going to try. Leon instructed.
Next time you have that recurring dream, finish the trauma dream with your resolution dream. For example, your search for the family, finding them, the meeting, and then resolution to Michael's relatives. Does this also dominate your daytime thoughts?
Charlie responded, it depends. It can. But it is often triggered by an event. Even a smell sometimes will trigger it.
Dr. Leon asked, let's talk about tranquil, positive memories that you have.
Charlie spoke of fishing at the lake as a child.
Dr. Leon explained, okay, here's what we will do. Trauma creeps in, we shall knock it out. Close your eyes and visualize a stop sign.
Scream, stop! Again, again, again.
Remember the physical feel of your face and jaw. Again, again.
Charlie yelled stop until he was hoarse. Now Leon said,
feel and do the same with no sound.
Okay, I think you got the first part.
Now pick a specific lake memory. Got it?
Charlie, I want you to yell stop. No sound. Start the lake memory. Boom.
Again, yell stop in your head.
Feel it happen. Boom. Lake memory.
Do this to stop the intruding thoughts. Every time it starts, every time it returns, every time, knock it out.
Knock it out and start the good, Leon said with encouragement.
Look for Michael's family. That is fine. Just monitor your body for anxiety and negative thoughts. A warrior knows their spot and higher power. This is about your thinking spot. Physical spots are important as well. People understand getting up and moving around to be comfortable. This is an emotional and mental move in your thinking and habits.
Charlie wrote in his journal, this time, I have to get this right. There may not be a next time.
One day at a time, let go and let God be my constant companion.